Warning. Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
In this peaceful town, on these quiet streets, something terrifying, something horrifying is coming.
Excuse me, we're closed!
Was it a wild animal?
This is really awful. Maybe the worst thing I've ever seen.
What was it, wild animals?
So what are you thinking?
I'm thinking zombies.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Critique Revolve. I am your host today, Thomas Cowley, and joined with me is the under-medicated Brian Smith. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
Example A. And today, we're talking about the latest film from Jim Jarmusch, The Dead Don't Die. The peaceful town of Centerville finds itself battling a zombie horde as the dead start rising from their graves. Now, this is one that is a little out of place in the middle of the, because we're smack in the middle of the summer blockbuster season. We've had John Wick, Detective Pikachu, Godzilla, Dark Phoenix prior to this, Aladdin. We've got Toy Story 4, Lion King, Spider-Man coming up.
Dark Phoenix came out.
Nobody cared about it.
Okay.
With Men in Black International.
Well, that one came out too?
We'll eventually talk about it, I'm sure.
Sure.
This one here, though, instead of all these big budget blockbuster, theoretically tentpole pictures, we have this relatively small indie film from a director who's known only for his indie films. He is not a big name. He's not a draw on his own. He's not a Spielberg or a Tarantino or anything to that effect. But within critic circles, Jim Jarmusch is very well loved. Brian, you've seen some of his other works prior to this, correct?
Yeah, I've seen actually almost everything he's done.
Can you give us some of those?
So you've got Patterson, which also stars Adam Driver. I think that was the last one that he did. No, I guess he did a documentary in between, but that's the last one he did before The Dead Don't Die. He did Broken Flowers, Coffee and Cigarettes, Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai, which is a just chronically underrated movie. Then he did, Limits of Control, Only Lovers Left Alive, and I think that's it. Yeah. Am I forgetting something? Stranger Than Paradise.
Yeah.
And Dead Man with Johnny Depp. Those are the other two. So, yeah, I mean, he's done a bunch of stuff. He's kind of like the who's the guy that did Twin Peaks?
Oh, fuck. I always forget his name.
Anyway.
David Lynch.
Thank you. It's like Lynch. How like Lynch is fucking weird, right?
Yeah.
Like, and everybody will admit that Lynch is weird, but he's also a fucking genius, you know?
Right.
And so what you get with Jarmusch is that his movies are... they're strange. You know,
he's a strange dude.
Well, I mean, obviously he's friends with Bill Murray and RZA. Like, what the fuck? Like, that's weird. Okay. But he's one of those people that I think is kind of a throwback to the old days of movies, like the 70s and the 80s kind of thing, where you have this love of storytelling in a visual medium. And it's not just about blowing shit up, and it's not about screaming at the camera. And, you know, the things that we see now.
It's not a lot of mainstream. And
that's what everyone's saying. That's why I call it a throwback.
Yeah.
Because I think that, you know, the mainstream thing now is it's all just, you know, tits, explosions, cursing.
Dicks as well. It's 2019. Oh,
that's right. I'm sorry. Tits and dicks. My fault. We need that T&D. That's your favorite, though, isn't it?
Well, I mean, there's nothing to not like.
T&D. That's your favorite, right? But no, anyway. So you've got all of those things in the mainstream movies that, right, I think. And Jarmusch is one of those people that's kind of been like, yeah, you know, fuck that. I'm not going to do that. And
he has traditionally, but this might be like the closest towards the mainstream people might think from what it looks like.
You've got
a zombie movie, a comedy zombie movie starring Bill Murray, Adam Driver. We got Chloe Savini, Steve Buscemi, Danny Glover, fucking, like you said, RZA showing up. We've got Iggy Pop makes an appearance.
Caleb Landry Jones from, was it Get Out? He was the brother.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Iggy Pop, Selena Gomez.
Tom Waits.
I was going to say Tom Waits. Yeah. There's so many
The cast is ridiculous, dude.
There's so many names. I remember as we were watching, as the opening credits started, they just dropped all those names. Yeah. And you're like, holy fuck. Like, he called in everybody he's known.
Right. Well, I mean, you have to figure, like, Broken Flowers and I think Coffee and Cigarettes had RZA in it, but Broken Flowers had Bill Murray. Mm-hmm. Patterson, like I said, had Driver. Like, I think this is one of those things that he's really kind of really good at doing, is pulling in those people that he has those relationships with.
And that's kind of leads to one thing that we felt like, we'll get to our end statement, but it really is, it's like everybody he's known, he's like, hey, I want to make this movie. I'm going to call everybody and just have fun making this movie. That is definitely the vibe going into
Absolutely. I think it's one of those things where even just watching the trailers, because everybody, I think at this point, has probably seen the trailer.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what it is. And it's a Bill Murray movie, and, you know, we're in the middle of the renaissance of those old actors, Bill Murray, Keanu Reeves, like all of that, where, you know, they're kind of having like the second coming. Mm-hmm. Bill Murray's been doing it for a while with Lost in Translation, I think kind of kicking it off for him. But when you're looking at it, you've got, you know, all of these people in this movie, you recognize every single name that's in the movie. Aside from the two dudes with Selena Gomez, I don't think there's anyone in this movie that you won't recognize.
Possibly. It's very possible to say that.
I mean, aside from like the zombies, like.
Well, even, I mean, two of them we knew.
Right. Well, more than that. Yeah. Like, there was quite a few of them that you knew, which is kind of crazy. But either way, you know, you look at it and I don't know where the fuck I was going with that.
Yeah. It's a huge cast. He got everybody he knows to make something he wanted to talk about make a movie about. Comedy zombie movie. Now, Jim Jarmusch is very much a critic darling and a independent film darling. People like his stuff, but when it comes to the mainstream, he's never had that resonance. People don't go to the theater to see it four times like they do Avengers or a Tarantino movie.
Sure.
He's never had that clout. This seems like on paper, like the first time that would be the case. Bill Murray, Adam Driver, zombies. It's naturally going to be compared to things like Shaun of the Dead or Zombieland. And from the trailer, it did look very dry, but it had a lot of humorous moments within the trailer. So it looked like it would be his first mainstream step. And it doesn't quite get there, I would say. It is funny. Brian and I both were, along with the audience, the people who went in, it was a packed theater for this, but full on laugh out loud at the moments that he had well written and well timed were fucking funny.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I think that this movie, it hits you in the mouth with its comedy, right? But I think it's actually the zombie part that kind of sucks.
It kind of is.
Like, I don't necessarily want to say that, because I think that the zombie thing has been done to death.
And that's part of the problem.
And I think that to give you a fresh take on zombies is almost impossible. You know, 28 Days Later did it.
Shaun of the Dead
Shaun of the Dead didn't give you a fresh take on the zombies, but the way
it framed it
the zombies didn't matter.
The zombies didn't matter.
Right.
But that's the thing, is you either have to have, how will we do it different? 28 Days Later, they're right. Fast.
Right. The zombies matter. We're all going to die.
Or you have to be like, how do we make this same tired setting
right.
fun and unique?
Well, and that was what Shaun of the Dead did. Shaun of the Dead made it funnier. Like, everything they did was extra.
Right.
And that was what was so funny about it. With this one, they kind of do, you know, the zombies aren't fast.
No.
But they're not slow. They're not necessarily decaying.
They're pretty slow, but they're not. But
they're not like shambling
horrors.
Right. Like,
they're like ghouls. Like that standard.
I think ghoul.
And the reason that the biggest thing is, it's an homage to Romero's old work.
Well, it's an homage to all of the zombie movies that came before.
True,
I think, and most of those are homages to Romero.
Right, but it's clear as day.
Oh, yeah.
There's copies of scenes.
Well, the moon being a big deal.
Right.
There's almost shot for shot on some scenes.
On some scenes
that are just ridiculous.
Deliberately done, yes. Calling back
for sure.
To Romero's
for
work.
For sure.
You know, from a cinematography and like, oh my God, as a film geek, I'm going to love it. It's in four to three aspect ratio. Your old ass.
Well, yeah, no, aspect, I mean, it's the aspect ratio that we all grew up with
and didn't realize what was wrong with the TV.
Well, right. I mean, it was the this film has been formatted to fit your screen.
I never knew what that meant
until you went to school. Right?
Yeah,
when you went to school for it. And,
oh, I've been lied to.
Well, because everything was shot in what is it?
35 millimeter.
But yeah, but what is the ratio on that?
Oh, fuck. I don't actually
I can't remember what the it's not 16 by 9.
No.
That's just the closest thing.
Right.
It's like 35 by something. Yeah. I can't remember. Either way, that's the normal aspect. That's what everything shot in. You're going to look it up right now for me. I appreciate it. So everything shot in one format. They cut it down to 16 by 9 for our TVs now. But they used to cut everything down to 4 by 3. And as a kid, I never realized it because I never went and saw movies in the theater. And so I didn't know that I was missing giant chunks of stuff from the sides.
Right.
You know, and it's one of those things where if you watch a lot of those older movies that they've now gone back and turned into 16 by 9, the sides of the screen don't fucking matter. They don't use the full screen. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like they don't. And I'm almost curious to see this movie when it comes out to see if they used, if there's like parts missing on the sides. Like as a throwback.
So it was 1.33:1.
Okay.
Was originally the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Academy aperture.
Which is like 16 by 9.
It's close to that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. 16 by 9.
It's had different ones over the years. Right. It's had
1.4:1.
2 to 2.2 is, right. is you had 70 millimeter when you had things wide like Lawrence of Arabia to give those right. sweeping panoramic well,
and,
shots.
And what is it? The HD 48 frames a second does a bigger. They use it for Batman.
I don't remember.
There's a couple scenes in Batman. The one with the Joker. Was that mm-hmm. Batman Dark Knight? In the Dark Knight, there's a couple scenes that they did in the IMAX aspect ratio. And IMAX ratio is different because it's huge.
Right.
IMAX ratio is
huge.
It's like 2.35 or something like that. But either way, this is, you know, you get this throwback to where it's a 4x3 format, which is honestly, at the beginning of the movie, we both sat there and were like, is there something wrong? Is this supposed to be 4x3? Like, we weren't in on the joke, obviously. And so, you know, I think it was one of those, it was just kind of neat to see that. It was neat to see a movie in 4x3 on a big screen because it just, it's so bizarre.
It was odd.
It was, well, and it was weird because you almost had to train your eyes to look up.
In a square.
Yeah.
Rather than like to what was around you.
Right, exactly.
So it wasn't bad, but it was fun in that aspect. Right. It's fun that they did 4x3. It's fun that it is funny. They have call outs to Romero, call outs to all other zombie and horror flicks and stuff like that. But in general, it is very aware. That's the whole thing. It's very aware of what is going on. I mean, I think one of the, I guess it's a little bit of spoilers. They're pretty meta very early on.
But we'll go, leave it there.
Yeah.
Leave it there. Is that, okay, so this movie goes meta.
Mm-hmm.
But there are moments where you can't tell if everyone's meta.
Or if
it's a Deadpool. Like if, is it a Deadpool situation?
Where only he knows.
Right, or she.
Right.
You can't tell. You flat out can't tell. And then towards the end of the movie, it kind of gives that away
right.
a little bit, which is great. But either way, you know, I mean, just, you know, you look at the cast and you look at the director. And like you said, maybe this is his foray into mainstream movies.
Maybe.
Right. I mean, I think Ghost Dog Way of the Samurai was kind of like that. That was way back in 1999 with Forrest fucking Whitaker mm-hmm. playing a samurai mafia hitman. Dope ass movie.
That's mainstream.
Dude, dope ass movie. I swear to God, it's amazing. And I know you haven't seen it because you haven't watched anything. So, but it's actually really fucking good. So anyway, but you've got all of this kind of lead up to what this movie could be.
Right.
And I feel like with Bill Murray, and we know Adam Driver's got the comedy chops too.
Absolutely.
Because you've seen him on SNL and you've seen some of the other things that he's done and he's been funny.
Black Klansman, he was funny in that.
Right, but it was very dry.
That's his style.
Very dry, but that's his style. And I think that actually plays very well with Bill Murray. Just look at Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
With what was it, Egon?
Yeah.
Harold Ramis. Harold Ramis and Bill Murray. Those are some of the funniest moments. Because
mm-hmm.
Dan Aykroyd kind of sort of plays the straight guy, but then is also a goofball.
Right.
But Harold Ramis was just flat out.
Spock.
Right. Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of. And then the one joke he tells just fucking slays. But either way, you know, you look at it, and so you know the dynamic there. You know what you could be in store for.
Right.
Right. And you look at it, you got Danny Glover, who I don't know how the guy still works.
I don't know how he stands up.
That's what I mean. He's like 192 years old.
Yeah.
He looks 197. Steve Buscemi, who's old as fuck too.
But looks always exactly good for a laugh.
Well, here's the thing. Buscemi looks exactly the same now as he did in that first Adam Sandler movie that you saw him in. You
Which
won't
was
remember
the first one.
You won't remember, and it doesn't matter.
It's not Billy Madison.
Happy
it's not
Gilmore.
The first one. Was it Happy Gilmore? Before?
Yeah, Happy Gilmore was the first one I think that he was in. Wait, was Steve Buscemi in?
I don't know if he was in that one. I remember him in
Billy Madison.
Billy Madison, because he had the rifle, and he's like, "Boy, am I glad I called that guy."
Right.
I don't remember. Yeah,
either way, it doesn't matter. So you have, you know, you got Buscemi, who, once again, you know what you're going to get with Buscemi. You're going to get the weird fucking lazy eye look, and mm-hmm. it's going to be funny, right? You got Tom Waits, who has been in quite a few movies and always plays some whacked out character.
Right.
Right. And then you've got Chloe Sevigny, who's just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, regardless of what she's doing, she's pretty fucking badass, right? And then you have the rest of the cast that kind of rounds it out. And so you're looking at it and it's, you know,
you're thinking this has got a great group of people.
Right.
It's funny from the trailer. I mean, but you're talking about there.
And the thing is, it's got real actors in it.
Yes.
And I don't mean to be an asshole, but when you're looking at people that are in these big blockbuster movies, they're not going to win a fucking Oscar.
Right.
Okay. And I know that they are. A lot of them are capable of it. Don't get me wrong. I know a lot of them are capable of it. But when you're doing a big blockbuster movie, you're kind of phoning it in a little bit. You're hamming it. It's a ham job. Because yeah. It has to be. You know, that's what's expected of you in these blockbuster movies.
Right.
So when you have these people who are legitimately, like, Oscar-nominated...
Good and actors.
Great actors. Aside from Danny Glover.
So mean.
Well...
I know what you mean.
He's the token. Anyway, yeah. I get it. Like, but you have like all of these great names. You have Jim Jarmusch, who we know can direct, and you expect so much. I feel like you expect so much from this movie that it can't help but let you down a little bit.
Yeah. And that's, I think that ultimately comes down to what I always harp on the most, which is the plot. The setup is there. We've got a strong director. We've got a great cast. We've got a fun setting.
We've got a strong DP too.
Yeah. The cinematography is there. We've got little homages, both in the filmmaking.
The music was fantastic.
And what's happening within the story, it's all there. But when it comes to the actual plot, it's painfully absent. And it's almost because it's doing the zombie movie thing way after everyone else did and also knew it was no longer fun.
Right. Well,
and it doesn't add enough to that to make it different. And that's a shame.
And I think we've all seen the zombie movie so many times at this point that if you do it and you don't do it damn near fucking perfect
or completely different,
then it's going to fall flat.
Yeah.
And I think that what this movie actually struggles with the most, there's a story there. There's the outline of a story there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really a story. Like, it's not.
It's a statement.
It's not really a, like, there's this weird, like the kids. There's this weird thing with these three kids that is like, just fucking punch you in the mouth with fracking is bad. Like,
well, that's the thing is that this doesn't have a story to tell.
No,
this has a statement.
It has a statement.
I have an opinion about the world in which we currently live, and I will say that here.
Yeah.
And the difference is with something like Romero, where the metaphor of the zombies told the story, here it's just there's zombies. And also, here's what I'm saying.
Right. Well, and that's the thing.
But they're not woven together.
No, it's non sequitur.
One doesn't lead to the other. No. It doesn't reinforce the other.
Like, it's like this weird thing where like they kind of sort of had an idea of how they were going to make it all connect.
But then they didn't bother.
But then they like just didn't. Like they started it. Like they started down that path like,
and
with the moon and stuff. Like
we think.
You can infer.
Yeah.
But.
Well, they beat you over the head with part of it.
Right.
And then you're like, okay, I get that part now. Right. I get the moon is important.
You're like, but how?
But why?
Right.
What are you trying to get to?
And then there's like that really weird thing that happens. Like halfway through the movie?
That's the very end of the movie.
Oh, is that it's the very end? Yeah. And we'll talk. Actually, I want to talk about that because there's another movie that's just like that.
We'll get to the spoilers.
We'll save it.
That's the thing is that there isn't a story to be told. There's a mm-hmm. statement to be made, but the story within it doesn't weave this narrative in. It just says, see, this is exactly why. And you're like, well, yeah, I've seen a zombie movie before.
Right.
What about this other glaring issue that you put in at the last minute? And what is this? How does this build to something greater? And it doesn't.
Right.
And it coming back to the meta bit, the whole movie doesn't quite go there, and it needed to.
Well, and it's like, yeah, because it's like it doesn't do the fully we're meta.
Yes.
But it does the we are meta. but it doesn't go all the way. And like, that's, I think that's what we talked about, was that it has a taste, but not a bite, you know, like there's,
if you're going to get hard and insert and thrust, well, you might as well continue and finish. Now you just started something.
So what you're saying is, what you're saying is,
I was blueballed by this movie,
right? You're a blueball, but no, what I'm saying though, is like, it's kind of like getting like one bite of something when you want a whole meal.
Right.
And that's what we get with this, is that you get like tiny bites of comedy that are great. And then you get like tiny bits of like the social
commentary, yeah,
geological, like
environmental,
global environmental. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. Environmental stuff. Like you get like a taste of that,
which again, people are like, yeah, we know.
Right. You get a taste of that. And then you get like a taste of Selena Gomez getting just fucking murdered.
Spoilers.
Is it? Yeah. But you don't actually see it. Yeah. Right. And like, there's things that like, It's right there.
It's right there. Enough to leave you wanting more and doesn't satisfy.
And here's the thing. You can do that in a movie. You can do where you get just enough to want more, but you have to give us a payoff at the end.
Yeah.
And this movie, the payoff.
All set up, no payoff.
Well, and the payoff that they do give you is cheap.
It's smug.
Yeah, it's a smug bullshit payoff.
And that's the thing, is that it's like, if you were the first person to do this.
Right.
Holy crap, cult classic.
Way to go, George Romero.
But you're the 80th person,
bro,
when they cut off. You're the 80 millionth person.
There you go.
And we stopped counting years ago. And that's where it feels a little bit of a shame. It's a little meta here. It's kind of funny here.
It's got
something to say
here.
A little bit. Right. It's a little bit of zombie horror. But it's not enough of any one thing to give you a satisfying experience.
Right.
So it's not that it's bad. It's just that you're like, it's not enough.
Well, and here's the thing. This is one of those things where I feel like that's almost what Jarmusch always does.
Yeah.
Coffee and Cigarettes was like that, I think, to a certain degree. Broken Flowers had moments, but in the end, you're kind of like, okay. Mm-hmm. Patterson, I think, is probably his most complete movie that I've seen. And even that one, it's boring, but it's good.
It's what we said in the parking lot. It's that this felt like the first draft of the script, and you're like, that's good enough.
Well, and that's the thing. Like what we said in the parking lot was like, as you're watching the movie, you're going, oh, that's a great idea.
What are you going to do with it?
Oh, we're just going to not know what happens to those characters ever again.
That's just not going to matter, I guess.
Okay, they mattered a whole lot. They had their own fucking thing, and now they're gone.
Screen time and time consumption of the movie.
Right, and then nothing. And it was bizarre. It was almost like we said, it was like that first draft where when you read it the second time.
Oh, fuck, I forgot about those guys.
I forgot to end that fucking storyline. My bad.
My best. Come back to... No.
Right, but it doesn't. And it's just like, why? And there's no like payoff there. Like, there's no reason not to come back unless he wanted a sequel, which doesn't seem like a Jarmusch thing to do.
There was an argument, and we'll get into it in spoilers, that I made, that maybe it's trying to speak towards some other thing.
Sure.
When it comes to the pretentious statement that's being said.
Yeah.
But that's giving a lot of credit without a lot of evidence.
Right. Well, and that's the whole thing, is that I think that there's a lot of this movie, like I said, where you're sitting there and you're like, oh, that was pretty dope. Oh, I'm going to wait 45 minutes for the next part that's pretty dope. Fuck me. Like, and that's kind of where I think the movie, just the pacing was a little bit off. And we all know I harp on pacing like you harp on story or plot. Pacing, I think, matters more than almost anything.
And this is something that Mike defended, this aspect of the movie off air, that for us, the first act and even up to the second act, we're like, okay, the pacing isn't too terrible.
Right.
Or there's enough comedy to carry me through. Mm-hmm. We're building interest and intrigue. But after the halfway point or the last third, it just keeps dragging on without giving us anything in return. Well,
the story never goes forward. The thing is like you reach this point where the story doesn't move anymore.
Very early on, we know what's happening, and then we just stay there.
Well, and you don't need an explanation for zombies. I think that's
one. Something to happen.
Here's the thing: I think one of the things that zombie movies do wrong is try to explain why there are zombies, because you're never right. I don't care. You're wrong in almost everyone's eyes, because nobody knows, you know, who fucking knows? Who cares?
It's not really relevant.
It doesn't matter. How they got here doesn't matter. Resident Evil, we don't care.
Now, unless you're telling some big story about
evil corporations,
like the communism, that they're a metaphor for something.
Well, sure,
that's
sure,
fine,
sure,
but
sure.
Most people don't do it. Usually, they're just there so you can shoot something indiscriminately without feeling like a terrible person,
right?
And Indiana Jones already killed every Nazi in existence.
That's true. That's true. The Nazis are all dead. Oh, they're not? Shit. But no. So I mean, I think Jarmusch does a good job with this movie. Like, I feel bad because I feel like at this point the review makes it sound like fuck this movie, it's awful.
And that's not what we're saying.
And it's not. It's just, it's not a bad movie.
You should see it, and you will be disappointed, I think.
Well,
and more if you're a mainstream person. And I say disappointed not as in...
You should see it, but you'll be disappointed. What the fuck kind of shit is that, man?
Because it's not bad, but you'll want more.
No, and I understand. Like, it's not bad. It's good. It's one of those where you're kind of like, well, I guess it's good because it's not bad. Does that make sense? Like, it's not bad, so you're like, oh, it's good. Well,
see, now you're laughing at me, but that made no fucking sense. Jesus Christ.
No, I just mean, like, it's not a bad movie, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good movie.
Right.
Like, it's like this kind of this in between.
5 or 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I would say it's a 5 or 6 out of 10. Mike's fucking shaking his head at me right now. Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's exactly right. It's a Jim Jarmusch film. And I think it all goes back to, if you are a fan of Jim Jarmusch, you're going to fucking love this movie. Like, you're going to blow this movie till fucking next year.
And that's fine. Yeah. But if you're your average audience member, and that's, I think, the primary audience that we're speaking to.
And I think you're right.
You're going to be like, well, I liked this part and I laughed about this, but I didn't really get...
I think what's going to happen with this movie is that the mainstream audience is going to go to it and go, I ain't get it.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's what you're going to see in the reviews. What you're going to see in the reviews.
It's not funny. I don't care.
You're going to see that top level where they go, oh, there was some really funny stuff, but it was kind of boring. And that's the end of the review. Like, that's it. That's all they're going to talk about. The cinematography is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Right? The camera angles are amazing. Color palette was great. Sound design, fucking awesome. Right? I feel Adam Driver absolutely killed it.
He steals the show. He absolutely does.
Killed it, dude. Like, I've seen him in a bunch of stuff that's not Star Wars.
Right.
Right? And this is by far my favorite performance of his.
And the thing is, too, the jokes that are there, they're fucking funny.
Right.
They're well-timed. They're well-delivered. If you know anything about Adam Driver's comedy or Bill Murray or Steve Buscemi, it's all fucking there.
Right.
And I there was a couple parts where you were dying laughing.
No, like legit, like the entire audience was fucking just killing it with their laughter. Like, and all other reviewers were laughing. And it was still the same thing after the movie with even the reviewers that were like, well, it was okay.
Or like, as Mike said, it was a Jim Jarmusch movie.
Well, and that's the thing is that it's kind of art housey.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there is no mainstream audience for that.
There isn't.
And it's also, but because of the zombie aspect, like it's not really like Sundance or
it's going to trick the mainstream to thinking they'll enjoy it. But unfortunately, most of them won't. And that's why it's a little bit of an odd duck while it's surrounded by all these other big mainstream blockbuster titles.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And the fact of the matter is, whether you like it or not, this movie will be compared to primarily Shaun of the Dead and Zombieland. Shaun of the Dead did this, what it was kind of going for with this one first, and I would argue better.
Well, here's the
thing. And Zombieland appeals to the mainstream because Twinkies.
Well, nice. So here's my thing with it. I think Shaun of the Dead leaned hard into the comedy.
It knew exactly what it was trying to be.
Well, of course it did, because, I mean, it was Simon Pegg and Nick Frost at their fucking comedic
best. Edgar Wright.
It's Edgar. I mean, it's those three dudes doing what they do. Right. And they lean so hard into the comedy that movie can't be anything else. Right. Then you look at Zombieland, and Zombieland was the big tentpole blockbuster movie for the mainstream.
Right.
That's what it is. And like you said, Twinkies. Right. With like a little bit of a story of love. Right. Because every zombie movie needs love.
Zombies on the toilet. Ha ha ha.
Yeah. Right. And it had Bill Murray. Yeah. So.
but it went for a lower hanging fruit.
Absolutely.
It wasn't as clever and well thought out as Shaun of the Dead's humor.
Right.
And it's not the dry meta creative homage humor that is in this.
Well, and that's what I was going for, is that this one doesn't lean into the comedy fully,
no.
But it also doesn't lean into the disparity of, you know, or not disparity, I guess the the absolute just soul-crushing defeat that is going up against a zombie horde.
Right.
Like, it doesn't do that, like, the despair. It doesn't, that's the word I was looking for, was despair. It doesn't lean into the despair of the situation, but it also...
Or the comedy.
But it doesn't lean into dealing with everything in jokes, like Shaun of the Dead did.
Right.
And I feel like because it's in this weird kind of limbo state, which is everyday life is like that. Sometimes you're making jokes about shit that's going on with you. Sometimes you're so fucking sad you want to crawl into a hole and die. You know, and you just want to fucking cut your dick off and hang yourself. Like, whoa. That's how that goes.
Just hang yourself, man.
Well, I mean, come on, bro. You gotta make a statement.
No.
Gotta make a... It's Pride Month. You gotta make a statement.
That's not... What? Ugh, Jesus.
So, but no, what I'm saying, though, is that because it doesn't lean into any one thing, it's in this kind of middle ground, which makes it feel too like real life. Like, even with the zombies, though. Like, it's just kind of like they're going through their day. They're doing their thing. Every once in a while, there's a really funny joke. And the rest of the time, it's just kind of gray. I think that's the best word for it. It's just gray. It's not black. It's not white. It's just gray.
So it's an odd duck, but it's like, I recommend you see it.
Yeah.
I can't guarantee you'll have...
I can't guarantee that you'll like
come out
it.
Of it happy, I guess.
Like, I can't guarantee that you'll even like the movie.
No, but I think you should see it.
I absolutely think you should see it. I think this is one of those movies where, especially if you like movies, which I feel like... Everyone that listens to our show enjoys movies, just in general, enjoys movies. This is one of those movies where even if you don't like zombies, even if you don't like Adam Driver, even if you don't like Bill Murray, you go to this movie and you will be okay. You know what I mean? Like you'll
have a good time with the parts that are there for it, but not all of it will be there.
Exactly.
Be and what you want.
It's not 100% of A. It's not 100% of B. It's not even a 50-50 mix. It's literally like 10% of this, 15% of that, 4% of this, all over the place with what it is, you know, because it's got kind of the weird, like, what's the word? Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Like, well, there's that leaned into the comedy.
Well,
too,
yeah, but I'm just saying, like, some of those moments, like with I think the Selena Gomez parts,
yeah,
are very, very similar to that kind of thing, that kind of movie where it's just like, or what's the one where Paris Hilton gets shot with an arrow in the head?
House of Wax.
Yeah, House of Wax. But kind of like that, where you have like this famous person who's literally only there to die.
Yeah.
There is no other reason for her to be in the movie. None.
Yeah.
And I love that. I that is one of my favorite things about some of these movies is where you take somebody who is kind of universally disliked. It's like it's the Bobby Knight thing, you know, the old coach at IU. He could run for governor and he'd get a shit ton of votes, but he'd never win because more people hate IU than love IU in the state of Indiana. Selena Gomez is the same way. There's a ton of people that love her, but there's more people that fucking hate her. It's the Taylor Swift, all of that shit. Mm-hmm. Right. And so you look at it that way. And I think that. Like I said, the movie doesn't do a great job at any one thing, but it does a good job at almost everything.
Yeah. So with that, we're going to get into the spoiler section here. If you're confused a little bit at this point and want to know specifically what we're talking about, spoilers are for you. We're going to get into that. We'll explain a little bit more as to why we feel this weird miasma of pretty good, okay, I don't know.
Man, that was a great word.
Miasma?
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Great word.
Look it up later.
Oh, I know that word. I'm just...
It's not for you. I'm saying that to everybody else.
Oh, okay. Got it. Yeah.
All right. We'll be right back.
It's Weird West Sunday.
So the first thing I look at is, okay, if you're doing a Western and your inspiration is the surrealism of Sergio Leone, then you better have your panels drawn in such a way that it resembles the work of Leone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Sergio Leone was known during a time when anamorphic was being used. The comic book pages of Pretty Deadly is you saw those mimicking images. And I'm not talking just the wide screen style shots, but also just the depth of field and making sure certain elements should stay in focus. Emma Rio studied and did her homework when she got down to doing this comic book.
Yeah, she did a great job.
I think going down the path and kind of creating their own lore. They created their own lore.
Mm-hmm.
I think it leaves more room for mystery and more room for creativity and originality.
Well, and like this one, I don't think they threw that so much into your face either.
Yeah.
You know, the Christianity or paganism or anything like that. It was, if you read it like I kind of read it.
Catch up on your favorite Weird West discussions from Mike and Clint every Sunday on Rain Man Channel 001. Listen from the Rain Man digital app or tune in. Just search RM Channel 001.
The Rain Man Show.
The Rain Man Show.
Exactly. See, Tony, seeing him now. Thomas, you were on the right track.
Thank you.
Because that's the first thing I thought. This is a story worthy of Andrew. Who else pees in their mouth in the shower?
Oh, my God.
So here's what happened. I just got off of a super long, like, 13-hour work week, right? Running off of, like, 3 hours of sleep. Wake up, get in the shower. Skipping some time, I just let go in the shower, right? Pee in the shower.
Who hasn't, right?
Animals? This is happening. You guys, wait, hold on. Let's tackle this first. You guys pee in the shower?
I've done it every now and then.
Who doesn't pee in the shower?
Wow. You're not supposed to.
Thank you, Raina. Thank you. Finally.
Don't let Raina fool you. Raina pees in the shower.
That was one time, and you said you wouldn't tell.
For more Rain Man, visit RainManShow.com.
Everybody, spoilers section for this one now, which will kind of be how we explain half of all of what we said in the first half of the review. Now, this movie is funny.
It is.
This movie is fun, but we said before that it gets meta very early and then doesn't quite go there enough. And that was the big crux theme to all of this.
Well, right, 'cause it
felt like a first draft. Mm-hmm. It had a couple of jokes. It didn't quite get there. It needed a little bit more in one direction or the other.
Well, and that's the whole thing. It's like, make a decision.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where when you're making that first, like, spec script, like, it feels like a spec script. And I say that because you don't want it to be...
because there's no dialogue.
No. I mean, it's a spec script because it's like, you don't want to be too funny, because if they're not looking for a comedy, you're not going to sell.
Right.
And you don't want it to be too gory, because if they're not looking for a horror movie, it won't sell. And you don't want it to be too meta, because if they're not looking for a meta, it's not going to sell. And it kind of feels like that's what they did with this
Jack
movie.
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And it, unfortunately, that didn't seem to change over time. There was no rewrite.
Right.
There was no...
Well, and here's the thing, though. That's fine.
And maybe that wasn't the point.
And I think that's exactly right.
And according to Jarmusch fans, that is the point. Mm-hmm. But again, for the mainstream, you're not going to care.
Right. Well, and here's the thing. It's not polished. It doesn't feel polished.
No.
And I feel like everything that's put out now is so polished and so been through and washed clean so many times by, you know...
Sandblasted smooth to offend no one.
It's test audiences. It's, you know, going through the MPAA, like all of those things that you send a movie through. And this one kind of is almost a throwback to a time when you didn't do all that shit. And it was kind of like, here's He-Man and Masters of the Universe. This is fucking awful, but you guys are going to love it. Like, you know, and this is kind of what that one feels like.
Yeah, you know? A little bit.
But talking about the meta stuff. So... The theme song of this movie is The Dead Don't Die. Thomas, do you remember who sings it?
Oh, God. What was his name? We could never pronounce it.
Come on, buddy.
Not Sturges or something like that. Or was it? I don't remember his last name.
Was it Sturges Griffin? Sturges something.
Shit, dude.
I can't remember. It doesn't matter. But here's the thing. So the theme song is written by this dude, right? And Adam Driver's character loves this song.
Mm-hmm.
And he at one point references it as it's the name of the theme song for the movie.
It's the theme song.
Right. And Bill Murray's like, what
the fuck are you talking about?
Right.
And so there's a few moments like that where a character knows something.
Right.
Or it's a little bit meta to that extent.
Right.
But it didn't go there after the two-thirds halfway point.
Well, the two-thirds point, I think, was the last time it went there, because there's the Bill Murray, the amazing scene with Bill Murray.
There's one little bit at the end.
I don't want to spoil that, because that part where he does the thing, talks about the thing, is so good. I want anybody that sees the movie to be surprised by it. It's just so, so good for such a, like, for a movie that didn't go 100% meta, that was so good.
Right.
It was so good. And it was.
That's the thing, is that it needed a few more of those moments.
But it makes me sad. And I think that's the thing, is that, like, I'm saddened because you could see how it would have been great.
Yeah.
And I don't mean great in the eyes of, like, the general public, because we all know they suck when it comes to reviewing a movie or talking about what's good, you know? And this one, it's
But I think it would have pushed it over the edge for those critics who are on the fence.
Right.
Which, unfortunately, is us at this point.
Well, it is. I think we're leaning more towards see it, obviously.
Right.
Than we are don't see it. But it's one of those where it's hard to explain why.
Yeah.
And we don't normally have that problem.
Yeah.
You know, because normally it's either we fucking hated a movie or we loved a movie.
Right. And it's in the weird middle ground, which is the hardest to review because there's some to like and some to hate.
Right.
And when I say the plot is the weakest part, it's because there's things that never come to fruition. We said that there's a first draft. For example, there's a couple of kids that are in this story. There's three children that show up and we keep coming back to them and they're in some sort of juvenile detention center.
Which
halfway
it seems
house.
Weird to me that this tiny ass little town has a juvenile detention center.
Less than 1,000 people live here.
And think of it like this. It was like 814 people live there. The jail had two cells.
Yeah.
Two cells in the jail.
Yeah.
Right, with the sheriff.
But there's a detention center that's big enough to have 30 kids.
Oh, more than that, dude. That thing was the size of a high school.
There's
Remember when they ran out the front?
It was the size of a high school. There's barracks, like you're in the military.
There were more guards at the detention center than there were cops.
Yeah, possibly. But the thing is, so they show up and they're talking about they're very knowledgeable for children.
It's like ridiculously knowledgeable.
Meta-level knowledgeable.
Right, for preteens.
For these preteen kids who are like anywhere between
I would say 11 to 14.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when shit goes sideways, they escape. And then they see one person kill a zombie. And they're like, I know where to hide. And they run off screen and are never seen again.
And that was like with still like a half an hour left in the movie.
There's still like 20, 30 minutes left of the movie. They've been in it for easily 10 minutes.
Oh, like they had a ton of screen time, dude.
Like a significant, that doesn't sound like a lot, but in an hour and a half, two hour long movie, that's a lot.
And when you watch it, you'll be like, oh shit, yeah, they're a big deal.
Because, they must matter.
Well, because here's the thing. They had as much screen time as Danny Glover.
But the other thing is too, it's one of those ones that if you took them out of the story, you lose nothing.
Because they
don't add any additional revelations that we didn't learn from other characters talking about the events that led up to this, the environmental aspect.
Here's the thing. The thing that's, I think, so frustrating for it is that the exposition that they give the kids to explain the environmental aspect
feels weird.
Was also while they were watching a news story. So you could have just shown us the news story. There was no reason for it. There was a weird subplot going on there that didn't need to exist with the guards and the kids.
That doesn't ever come to matter again.
No, it never matters. And like, there's no explanation for any of it.
Right.
And it's like, what?
And that's just the thing, bizarre. Just like the children that are in that movie, there feels like there's elements thrown in just to be there.
Right.
For example, an actress we didn't reference earlier, partly because of spoilers.
Sure.
Is Tilda Swinton.
Yeah.
She is in this movie. And I don't want to spoil her aspect so much, but she's very weird in this movie deliberately. And it's funny while she does some of it.
Sure.
But ultimately, it means nothing.
So the thing that's, I think, the strangest part of the Tilda Swinton character is the way they remove her from the movie.
Yeah.
And we'll leave it at that. Because once again, I think that you lose something in the movie if you know what we're talking about here. But the whole thing is the way they remove her from the movie means that she didn't need to exist in the first place. There was no reason for her to be there at all. There's no explanation for it. There's no explanation as to what the fuck just happened. None of it matters. Literally, none of it matters.
Nope.
And it's bizarre because at least the Tom Waits character
matters to the story
Hermit,
that he's
saying. Was it Hermit Bob?
Hermit Bob.
Hermit Bob. He matters. Like his story arc matters. Even Bill Murray and Adam Driver matter.
And all of them are funny, and we learn things. Right. We experience the zombies through one of them.
Right.
We experience this doesn't make sense. Why is the environment changing so much through Hermit Bob and his knowledge in a way that doesn't feel like heavy exposition?
Right.
So it works. But then Tilda Swinton's character is there for like one or two jokes that aren't fantastic. The most interesting part of the whole story and her, I'm thinking, okay, so this must be why X, Y, and Z.
So here's the
and
thing.
It's like, no, it's just also there.
So I almost feel like
it's a joke.
Well, I felt
it's
like
a joke within it.
Well, here's the thing. It almost felt like they needed either the Michonne character.
Yeah.
Right? Or the Kill Bill.
Mm-hmm.
like the Uma Thurman character.
Well, they know. Okay, so we always have guns. We need somebody with a sword.
Well, and
that's all they had.
But it's so bizarre. It's just it's weird for the sake of being weird. And you know how much I hate that.
Yeah. Well, same. It doesn't add anything.
No.
There's no message to it. It's just there. And again, we're not trying to spoil it. Because no one would see it coming.
No, that's the whole thing is that like you literally can't talk about it. You can't talk about it because no one sees it coming because it doesn't need to be that way. It doesn't make sense.
It's just dumb.
What was the movie we saw where the end twist or whatever, nobody saw it coming because it literally came out of left
field. This year it was probably Glass.
That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it
was. Where I was like, hey, here's this other shit. Yeah. And you're like, why?
Yeah, it was. It was Glass.
Well, because you didn't expect it.
But that's what you said. That's literally what you said was, oh, yeah, you think you're so clever. But, dude, no, it was M. Night.
Right? M. Night Shyamalan, yeah.
And so it was like, that's not a twist, dude. That's not like the Sixth Sense twist. And this is kind of the same thing. Like, there's just weird shit that happens for the sake of weird shit happening.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that it is funny and you'll laugh because I died laughing. I said,
yeah,
Brian died laughing as we were watching some parts of it. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, it's too smart for its own good. It's too smug and like, yeah, I said this environmental impact message, but I used zombies. And it's like, yeah, we know.
No,
what else you got?
But see, that's exactly it. Is that like
it's been done before, but you're still proud
of yourself
of being the first guy to quote cop, like think of, oh, I just copied it off the internet. It's like, yeah, we have all done that.
Right.
What else you got, kid?
Right.
And that sounds really condescending. And I'm sure Jim Jarmusch fans are like, dude, you don't even get it. Maybe, but the mainstream won't either. Mike walked in perfectly to smile at me. But that's the thing is that people just aren't going to really care. And it's hard when I harp on narrative so much to say, oh yeah, it all led to something greater because it just didn't.
But I mean, that's kind of the Jarmusch way is that it doesn't really lead anywhere. It's just there.
You're just there.
It's just there. And I think that this movie is that, but with zombies thrown in. And I don't necessarily mind movies that are just there. I think that sometimes they're good, like Patterson. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're bad, like Inside Llewyn Davis, because it sucked. But I mean, that was one of those movies where I believe our comment there was it didn't go anywhere. There was no point for them. And I don't mind not having a point to a movie. Like there's no point to fucking Jurassic Park. All right. Like, there's no point.
Well, but even then the characters undergo a change.
Do they?
The main guy does for sure.
Oh, you mean in the original?
Yeah, well, I'm not talking about the other horse shit.
Oh, okay.
The Jurassic World penis crap.
Yeah. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
We're not talking about that.
No, you're talking about the first one where he's like, oh, I want kids now.
But that's the thing is like, there's not even a character changes or a character fails to change.
No, they just kind of.
There's no characterization. There are just characters.
So here's the thing. Jim Jarmusch is great at doing the everyman. It's just the basic dude,
mm-hmm.
you know, and almost all of the characters in this movie, aside from like Tilda Swinton.
And Farmer Bob.
Farmer Bob. It was Hermit Bob and what was
Hermit
it?
Bob and Farmer Frank. Yeah.
Farmer Frank Miller.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So you've got Farmer Frank and Hermit Bob. Those are the only like three characters that are actually weird.
Mm-hmm.
But the two of them are weird in like a completely relatable kind of way.
Yeah.
And one of them's just fucking out there.
Yeah.
Which is explained technically.
But
the rest of the characters are just going about their fucking day. And shit goes sideways.
Which for the story that he's trying to say, or not again, not the story, but the statement he's getting across, it is very obvious. Very bleak, but very obvious.
Right.
But again, it's like, yeah, I know. I've seen zombie movies. I've seen Mad Max. What else do you have for me here?
I
feel like it needed more jokes to tie these other elements together for the story to satisfying.
Would you have been happy if they would have just cut in that one scene from Brown Bunny right in the middle of the movie?
I'm not going to say no, but this doesn't help this doesn't help this conversation either.
But no, I mean, I think that the movie's good. I liked the movie. I did. I thought that the jokes are fantastic.
I think everyone should see it once. I don't know.
I don't know if I'd ever watch it again.
I don't think it has rewatchability. I don't think most people will care. I think they're like, yeah, I laughed at those parts, but I didn't really care about the movie.
Well, here's the thing about it, though, is that I think that the funny parts are memorable enough
mm-hmm.
that it's worth watching.
And it very easily could become a cult classic down the road later to where people refer to it just like they do refer to Shaun of the Dead or other things. They'll call out those jokes or those moments.
Sure.
You know, but in general, I don't see this one going there. So, unfortunately, that is the answer we have when it comes to spoilers and whether or not you should see this. Yes, but we can't guarantee that you'll like the experience 100%. You'll rate it a 5 or 6 out of 10, I'd say. Unless you're a Jarmusch fan, and then, you know, we're heathens and completely wrong. But
well, of course.
Mike will leave that review later.
Sure.
So, with that, we want to thank everybody for listening to Critique Revolve, and we'll see you all next time.
The Corova Milk Bar sold Milk Plus. Milk Plus Velocet, or Synthomesk, or Drencrum, which is what we were drinking. This would sharpen you up and make you ready for a bit of the old ultra-violence.